Provost. Are you full? Robin Jan and all the people that could eat yourself in. It's a good thing. And I got through a great meal with nothing on my shirt. It's the first thing my wife's going to ask. The food was great, but I do have to make mention of one thing. I had a piece of a venison loin tonight that may have been the best I've ever had, and I come to find out it was killed by the number one deer hunter in this room. And you all need to know who that is. Blaine, stand up and wave. If I inadvertently call Rob Ralph tonight, please forgive me.
I won't.
I've known Rob about 2 months. I've known his brother Ralph about 30 years. So that Freudian slip could possibly happen tonight. Thank you for having me here. It's my honor. As I told the pastor earlier, it's a brave man that will turn his congregation loose in front of the screen. I have been on the professional end of the outdoor industry for a little over 40 years. About 30 years ago, the good Lord impressed upon me all of the opportunities that He had given me, all of the talents He had given me, and asked me why in the world wasn't I using those talents for His glory. And the next day, I started my outdoor ministry. My ministry is designed to use a common love of the outdoors to reach lost men and women who also love the outdoors. My motto, if you will, is that My Crew's Outdoor Ministry is dedicated to bringing folks from the tree stand, from the bass boat, from the duck blind, directly to the foot of the cross. I have, in many situations just like this, this is one of dozens that I do every year. Wild game dinners, men's retreats, summer camps, and I'm always looking to build a new outdoor ministry wherever I'm speaking. You may or may not be from this church. If you're not, amen. Tickle that you're here. But if you have any desire to build an outdoor ministry in your church, I'm here to help. We live in a target-rich environment when it comes to the outdoors. And there is nothing more gratifying than getting on your knees in a fishing boat and leading somebody to the Lord. The Holy Spirit is a very poor shot. When the Holy Spirit comes down and shoots the guy you're praying with, you're going to get a blessing too. Trust me about that. We're going to talk a little bit about Africa tonight. There's some ways you can connect with me. And I recommend that you do the Facebook thing, because I've always got something neat going on Facebook. And a lot of you will see your pictures on my Facebook page probably before the sun sets tomorrow. I grew up about an hour south of St. Louis. I see a lot of beautiful red shirts and jackets in here, and I see some pretty nauseating blue ones. I went to school in St. Louis, Washington University, and the job I had to put myself through school was I was the security guard in the cardboard dugout at Bush Stadium for 5 years. I bleed red. So a quick question. Does anybody, and the topic at this point is still baseball, does anybody know the difference between a dynasty and a wannabe? 237 miles and 10 world championships. That's the difference. I'm poking Pastor, but that's okay, because I warned him ahead of time. Not everybody knows what the Chicago Cubs and Michael Jackson have in common. They all wear a glove on one hand for no apparent reason. But enough of this serious stuff. I am going to take you on a trip to Africa tonight. And how I got to Africa is an extremely important part of the whole story. My education and background is in medical imaging, specifically nuclear medicine. And I was the director of medical imaging at Blessing Hospital in Quincy, Illinois for about 25 years, raised a family in Quincy. Medical imaging technology advances almost every day. And back many years ago, a new modality came out called the PET scanner, PET, positron emission tomography. Those scanners were multi-million dollar units, and you had to spend another $3 or $4 million just to build a place to put it. So smart guys figured out a way to put these machines on semi-trucks and pull them from one hospital to the next clinic, and just make a route out of it so that hospitals that couldn't afford to do it could still have that service offered at their place at least once a week. Well, as the director of imaging, I jumped right on that. I did my research. I found the company that I thought would work, and it was in Naperville, Illinois. It was a privately owned company, and I kind of liked that. And the owner was Greg Pape. Long story short, I became Greg Pape's customer. Well, as we got to know each other, and he learned about the professional end of the outdoors, he said, hey, he said, is there any way that you can kind of use your networks and help me out? I said, what do you mean? He said, I would like for you to book hunting and fishing trips for some of my other clients, some CEOs, hospital directors, physicians, doctors. He said, is that something you'd like to do? I said, yeah, I'll be happy to do that for you. I made myself available to Mr. Pate. And we did that for well over a year. One day out of nowhere, I hear a knock at my office door in Quincy. There's good Greg Pate. And I said, well, this is one of two things. Either you're cutting my service or you're raising my prices. Which is it? He said, nope. He said, I'm here to tell you something that you didn't know 5 minutes ago. And I said, what's that? He said, you're going to work for me. I said, obviously you've had more time to think about this than I have. So understand that my first answer is a knee-jerk reaction, no. He said, what do you mean no? I said, Naperville is spitting distance from Chicago. That's a communist country. That's what that big sea is for. I said, no. I said, I'm happy with my family right here in Quincy. I'm a small town guy. I have no desire whatsoever to go to Naperville or whatever. No, Richard, no. He said, well, you haven't even heard my offer yet. I said, your offer doesn't matter. He said, but you don't know how much money I have. I said, it doesn't matter. They haven't printed enough money. Doesn't matter how much you've got. He said, well, I wouldn't be here if I had done my homework. He said, your house is 3 blocks from the Amtrak station in Quincy. Our office is 6 blocks from the Amtrak station in Naperville. You will get on the train in Quincy on Monday morning, come to Naperville. You will work in the office Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. After work Wednesday, you're going to get on the train in Naperville and go back to Quincy on Thursday and Friday. You'll work from home. You'll be in the office 3 days, you'll be home 4 days, and all your expenses will be covered above and beyond your salary. This man has more money than Carter's got liver pills. I went home and talked it over with my wife, prayed about it. 2 weeks later, I was the vice president of operations at Medical Outsourcing Services in Naperville. Best job, I mean, perfect job for somebody with my education. All because I made myself available to this man a couple of years ago. Greg Pate has never in his life fired a gun, bigger than a BB gun. He had never been hunting a day in his life. We're at lunch, he and his wife, Erin, and myself, and he said, "Hey, Mike," he said, "I need you to book a hunting trip for me." No problem. I mean, we've had this conversation 100 times. I just need to know who, when, and where. He goes, "This hunting trip is for me." Hold him back. He said, "I want you to get me a hunting trip to Africa to kill a lion and a tiger." That's exactly what I did. I laughed at my boss right in front of his wife. I could see by the look on his face, my career was going south fast. Whenever I finally recovered, I said, "Greg, I can get you to Africa, but I cannot get you on a lion and a tiger." He said, "Why?" I said, "Buddy, there's just not any tigers in Africa." He said, "You're the hunting expert. You're telling me there's no tigers in Africa. Do you know how many times I've seen Tarzan fight tigers and lions in the same movie?" That kind of logic's difficult to argue with. I said, "Would you settle for your first hunting trip? Would you settle for a lion?" He said, "Yeah, okay, that'll do." I said, "But it's going to take hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of you and I on the range with my gun to get you ready to go shoot a lion." He said, "Whatever it takes, whatever it takes." He said, "You book it." I went to my hotel room that night, got on my laptop, and I reached out to my entire outdoor network. "I need a lead, guys. I need a lead on where can I take a rookie in Africa on a lion hunt." Now, before everybody gets up in arms and somebody starts yelling the lions are an endangered species, trust me, they are not. For the last 3 years, the two top words we hear every day is fake news. Lions are not endangered in Africa. There are at least a half a dozen countries that have huntable numbers of lions. And the reason that there are half a dozen countries with huntable numbers of lions is because of hunters. Because of the massive number of dollars that are going in there to protect not only that species, but others. In fact, just a piece of information, the only species in Africa that you are not allowed to hunt is the cheetah. It's the only endangered, only species in Africa that's on the endangered list. Okay, I'm done preaching. It wasn't 20 minutes, and I get a telephone call from my very best friend in Park Hills, Missouri, Roger Lewis. He said, "Hey, I got your lion deal all done." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Just last week, I was watching the Outdoor Channel, and there was a guy in South Africa on a lion hunt." He said, "I don't remember any details, except I can tell you when it was on the Outdoor Channel." I said, that's all I need. That's a start. He gave me boom, here it is. I could watch the episode. I watched the episode. It was in South Africa, the country of South Africa. And it was on... It was at Intrepid Safaris. In Africa, leased ground is not called leased ground. It's called a concession. I didn't want any high fence stuff. I didn't want to give Greg any undue advantage on his maiden voyage. The professional hunter's name was Philip Duplessis. And there was a telephone number in South Africa. "I don't know what time it is in South Africa. I'm going to give it a shot. Maybe he's having breakfast. Maybe he's sound asleep." I called the number. A lady answered the phone in a rougher voice than mine. It was Philip's wife, Anka. "Yeah." Oh, by the way, they speak Afrikaner. South Africa has their own language. It's a combination of German, Dutch, Portuguese, English, and Martian. And I would get about every fifth word. "Could I speak to Philip?" "Nine." Gosh, I must have overheard. "Will Philip be in later?" "Nine." "Can you tell me when I can call back to talk to Philip?" Philip is in the U.S. What? Philip happened to be at the Dallas Safari Club meeting selling hunts. He's that close. I said, could I get his cell phone number? She gave it to me. Well, I knew what time it was in Dallas, so I called him. I said, Mr. Duplessis, my name is Mike Rue. I need to talk to you about booking a lion hunt for my boss. I will tell you right now, because it will make a difference. Money is no object. He said, say that one more time. I said, money is no object. He said, I was supposed to fly out of Dallas tomorrow evening. I was going to Atlanta and then fly to Johannesburg. I said, when you get to the airport, you will have a ticket with your name on it to Chicago. And then I will fly you from Chicago to Johannesburg. All you have to do is come and meet my boss. I'll be there. I sent a car to O'Hare to pick him up. Told Greg that we were going to have lunch that day. Didn't tell him why. So he and Aaron and I are at the table. And I said, you know, I said, we were sitting here yesterday, and you brought up some outlandish idea about going to Africa to kill a lion. He said, yes. I said, well, as soon as our car pulls up out front, I have someone I want you to meet. He goes, who? I said, he just happens to be a professional hunter from South Africa, and he's going to come talk to you about shooting a lion. He looked at his wife and said, it was yesterday, right? It was yesterday? Did we? Yep. Yeah. 24 hours, I'm going to put the man at your table. Philip walked in, I introduced myself, introduced him to Greg and Aaron. He sat down with a big binder. I just backed off and had my lunch. I'm done. I got 5 stars from the boss today, guys. I'm done. I'm going to enjoy dessert. They talked and they talked and they looked through all the brochures and all the pictures of previous and all of it. And Greg said, I'm in. Philip got out his book, and this was in September-ish. He said, okay, I'm looking at November or December of next year. Greg said, no, you're not. I'm ready. Mike's going to show me how to shoot, and I'm ready. I'll be ready in 6 weeks. Philip said, I don't think I can put together a lion hunt in 6 weeks. I said, Philip, remember what I told you on the telephone? He flips really quick back to this year. He said, I can squeeze you in for a 7-day lion hunt the last week of October. He said, it is the last week that we hunt in South Africa, because then it's springtime and everything gets green and you can't see 30 yards. Greg said, look, he said, well, don't you want to know how much? I said, Philip. Okay, so Greg looks at Philip and he says, well, obviously, I want to take my wife. Because when we're done hunting, I'm going to take her to Victoria Falls, Kruger. They were going to have a month-long vacation after he got through hunting. So he looked at Philip and he said, I need you to book this for 3. I hadn't even looked up. I mean, dessert, I'm happy. I looked up and he goes, Mike. He goes, there's no way I'm going to Africa without my number one hunter. You're in. I think pumpkin pie fell out of my mouth. I know I had to be like a calf looking at a new gate. He said, yeah. He said, you're in. And he said, you bring Nancy too if she wants to come. I said, well, I'll have to go home and check my schedule and talk. Yeah, I'm in. Yeah. Write it down. Well, my wife didn't go because she was not going to do a 22-hour plane ride. So I'm sitting at that table trying to soak it in. For a football player, the Super Bowl, that's as good as it gets. For a baseball player that wears red, the World Series is as best and as good as it gets. Trust me when I tell you, Africa for a hunter is as good as it gets, and I'm going. Why am I going? Because on several occasions leading up to that day, I had made myself available to this man. wow, how is this paying off? We're going to Africa. Can we do half lights? Is that possible?
Yeah.
I think on a lot of these half lights would help. Oh yeah, that'll help. So this is my first look at the Kalahari Desert. The Kalahari Desert is on the border, the northern border of South Africa. The southern border is Zimbabwe. And I visited Zimbabwe while I was there. They have the worst economy in Africa. South Africa has the best. If South Africa was not so corrupt, it would be the most powerful planet on the country. Because they've got more gold and more diamonds and more potential revenue than anywhere else on the planet. But their leaders are corrupt, and that's why they get assassinated every other year. That was my first look at Africa. That's Philip on the right. A couple of his, again, in the Tarzan movies, they're called gun bearers. That's not true. Those are professional hunter assistants. And that guy right there is George. He was the guy that was assigned to me. Because as the story progresses, you will see that when Greg's hunt finished, he and Aaron went on vacation, and he turned to Philip and he said, I'm leaving Mike here for a week, let him do what he wants. That's where I stayed. Yeah, it's not grass and some campfires. That's the front door to my room. That's the back door to my room. That is the lodge itself. That's where all the plans are made and all the meals are eaten. And that is right over the kitchen table. Now, I'll stop here. Even though my wife couldn't come, she knew that my trip there was going to be the closest thing she was going to have. And she said, if you come back from 2 weeks in Africa and every single picture's got a dead animal in it, you're living in the garage. She said, your eyes and your camera is my chance to see Africa. Thank you. Thank you. A set of sympathetic eyes right here in front. Thank you. That is where I hunted. 20,000 acre square is considered one section. Philip's concession was 19 sections. So as we go through these next few slides, please understand I am not in a park. I am not on a preserve. I've got my camera over one shoulder and my rifle over the other. I am in the Africa bush. And again, springtime had just started.
Ants.
That's a termite mound. And I throw this slide in because it's not in scale. That termite mound is taller than me. There are estimated 5 million termites. And they will, you'll see it's at the base of a tree. They start to burrow at the base of a tree. They go down, they get all their tunnels, and they eat the roots. And when all those roots are gone from that tree, they'll move 30 yards to another tree and go to work. Gazillions of them. It's not like a central Missouri deer hunt where you turn the corner and, oh, there's a raccoon, that's nice. Oh, look, there's a woodpecker on the tree. No, it's not like that over there. It's not like that over there. You don't know what's around the next corner. Oh, I have to introduce you to Ethel. Ethel drove me nuts because on the very first afternoon, Ethel adopted me and followed me around like a puppy. And for 2 days, it aggravated me to no end until I realized waterfowl hunters will understand what I'm about to say. She was my confidence decoy. With her around and not scared to death, anything else that I might be slipping up on, focused in on her, and if she's not scared and running off, then everything must be fine. But I will tell you this, as much as I learned to appreciate Ethel, by the sixth day, my goodness, those drumsticks were looking good. 40-pound drumstick? Yeah, I mean. This is like finding Waldo. Very seldom do you see a full-grown antelope 30 feet up in a tree. This was on my second morning, just me and George, and that is how a leopard stores its meat. I tracked that leopard for 4 days. Every other animal that I got to shoot, I shot while tracking that leopard. And I don't think we ever got close to it. That's with a telephoto lens.
Yes.
Well, I had no intention of going up to pet that one. And all of these animals that I'm showing you are legally hunted animals. They just weren't on my hit list. They weren't on my hit list. I have no reason to kill a pony in pajamas. So. That is a greater eland. Eland were not on my hit list, but they are for my next trip. Because here's what I found out. Here in Missouri, just like Blaine did, you purchase your deer tag, and the Department of Conservation says, good luck. Do your best. Doesn't matter if you kill one or not, we've got your money, we're happy. South Africa is the only country in Africa where you do not purchase your permit until your animal is on the ground. And they will tell you ahead of time how much those permits are. You can build your budget to go to Africa knowing exactly what you're going to spend, almost to the dollar. Because the professional hunter's going to give you his rates, the airline's going to give you their rates, South African government's going to tell you how much a kudu costs to kill. You can build your hunt around your budget. That's why I'm going back to South Africa, especially for one of those. Ah, that's a jackal. It's a cross between, it's bigger than a fox, smaller than a coyote, and just like over here, they're a predator, they want them gone, they eat the baby everything, so I took advantage of putting a little bullet in that guy. This is an impala. This was my first trophy animal from Africa. It was a longer shot than I wanted to take, but it was a bigger impala than I had hoped to find. This impala missed the Safari Club record book by less than 2 inches. It was by far the biggest and oldest one we saw on the whole trip. That's my Gemsbok, or oryx. This animal has the widest range of any plains game on the entire planet. They are found throughout Africa. They are found throughout the Middle East, in the deserts of Iraq and Iran, and in Afghanistan. They are literally everywhere. So I was tickled to get him. But there's my trophy. There's my kudu. Again, spotted this kudu on day 2. And in the process of tracking that leopard, came across him 2 other times, but no shot, and took him on day 6. He is a Safari Club record book kudu. It takes 50-inch curls to get into the record book, and those are 52-inch curls, and they have ivory tips. That's how old he is. I'm 6'5". I'm well over 250. That's a big animal. And this is the slide where I stop everything to tell you I was not trophy hunting. Every scrap of meat from every animal taken on this trip went to feed George. Remember George? Went to feed George and his family of 40. And that's how they survive. That's how they survive, and I was tickled to do it. That's Greg Pink. And that's his lion. So let me tell you quickly about the lion hunt. It's the evening before the lion hunt, and I'm thinking, okay, Philip's going to have all of us in bed by 8 o'clock, because 2 hours before the sun comes up, we're gone. Well, at 11 o'clock, we were eating homemade ice cream. I'm like, man, this is our hunt. And this was the next day was the first day of the entire hunt. So I said, what time does the sun come up? He said, a little after 5. I set my alarm for 3:30. I'm up and dressed and ready to go at 4:15. I go out, nobody else is up yet. I sit down on the couch in the living room. The next person I see is Anta, and it's 9 o'clock. And she comes out and starts breakfast. And at 10 o'clock, everybody's up and we're having breakfast. I'm looking at my watch. Come on. Finally, I had to break down. Philip, when are we going lion hunting? He said, we've been lion hunting since the sun came up. He says, I got 3 sets of trackers that are spread out over several hundred square miles. And when they find the right track, they'll radio to me, and then we'll go wherever they are. He said, we've been hunting for hours. I said, I'm taking a nap.
Sounds exactly like what I do.
So I hear his radio go off. He grabs it, and somebody from Mars is talking on the other end, and then he talks Martian back to him. And he says, all right, let's go. We got a track. All right, finally. So here's the deal. On a lion hunt, the client has a rifle. The professional hunter has a rifle. You have to have 2 guns on a lion hunt. That's the law. So we're going to have the tracker, Greg, Philip, Greg's wife Erin, she's coming, and me with a video camera on my shoulder. Because the deal was, if I would film his hunt, make it all nice and pretty on a disc so he can show it to everybody that he knows for the rest of his life, that's me doing my work to get to stay and play when he leaves. So we get out of the jeeps and we look, and the cat track is as big as a paper plate. Nothing like I've ever seen before. Nothing like I've ever seen before. Nothing like I've ever seen before. So the tracker takes off, and so we're in a little parade. Before we start, Philip said there's only one rule. Stay close. Everybody stay tight. Everybody stay close. Everybody stay tight. You know, don't wander. Stay right tight with the group. So we've gone a half an hour. The tracker waves Philip up. Talk, 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 talk. We go another 30 yards. Talk, 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 talk. Philip turns around and says, okay, things have changed a little bit. He said, we've tracked this cat in a circle. He's behind us. He said, the hunt's going to slow down quite a little bit. He said, the thing we have in our favor is the weather. The sun is high, and it's getting hotter by the minute. So we're going to move 10 yards, and everybody's going to take binoculars and look in every piece of shade you can find, under every tree, under every bush. Because by now, he's in the shade, and that's where we're going to find him. Another half hour. I mean, he was not lying. 10 steps and everybody would stop. 10 steps and we'd look at everybody. All of a sudden, the tracker just freezes. I mean, just like a statue. And Philip takes this rifle off his shoulder. He motions us all forward. 60 yards. There's a lion sitting. He's sitting, he's this tall. But he's facing us. He knows we're there. He's probably been watching us for a half hour. Philip said, we're going to have to move around slowly so that Greg can have a shot at the side. So we're moving slowly, slowly moving. And as we move, a hole in the tree caused a sunbeam to come right down on that lion's face, and it just lit up bright yellow. It was gorgeous. I zoom in, and the lion's face fills the screen. And I anchor down. I get the camera, and this is a money shot. This is the one. And I'm zoomed in, and I'm just a solid. Now remember, I'm watching this entire hunt with one eye in black and white. Thinking, here I am, 60 yards from a male lion in the wild with a camera. Thought my mom raised a smarter boy. But this is the money shot. All of a sudden, Philip grabs me with both hands. He is angry. The veins are popping out on his forehead as he drags me the 4 or 5 steps to get up with the group. We get around. Greg makes a perfect shot. The lion runs off, goes 50 yards, dies dead. Perfect. Everybody's happy. High fives. The celebration's going on. Philip turns to me, and he is still mad. And he said, what was the only rule on this hunt? I said, you said for everybody to stay together. He said, you did not do that. I said, but Philip, look, I had this shot. There was a black bird flitting around behind the lion's face. I mean, he said, Mike. He said, when you fell behind the group, you became the weak one of the herd. That lion has spent his life eating the weak one in the herd, the one that falls behind, the one that can't keep up. He said that was not a black bird flitting around behind that lion's head. He said it was his tail flicking, and they do that just before they charge. And had he charged you at that distance, there is no possible way I could have kept him off of you. You're lucky to be alive. He said, I've never lost a client, but today's the closest I've ever come. He said, what do you have to say for yourself? I said, I need dry shorts. Folks, that's serious stuff right there. That's not bunny rabbits and gray squirrels. That's serious stuff. We're in lion camp that night having a celebratory feast much like we had here. Let me back up. One detail I forgot to say, because remember what I told Philip about Greg on the telephone? The permit for a lion in South Africa is $54,000. Just so you know. Just so you know. And Greg had a full body mount done in South Africa and then shipped to Chicago. So we're sitting at the table at dinner. Obviously, Greg's adrenaline is going through the roof. He said, one day is not enough, Philip. He says, one day is not enough. He says, I want to go hunting tomorrow. He says, I got to go hunting tomorrow. He says, I want to kill an elephant tomorrow. Philip said, well, I appreciate your enthusiasm. He said, but in the entire country of South Africa, there are 6 elephant permits allotted per year. And those permits have been bought for the next 20 years. That's not going to happen tomorrow. Probably not going to happen for you ever. He said, well, then I want to kill a rhinoceros. Same deal. Two rhinos per year in South Africa. He said, well, tell me about the big five. What's this big five? I said, well, the big five is lion, leopard, rhino, elephant, and Cape Buffalo. He said, don't even ask about a leopard. We've already filled all of our leopard tags this year. But what about a Cape Buffalo? Philip said, are you sure? He said, permit's $18,000. Greg says, like that matters? He said, can we go Cape Buffalo hunt tomorrow? Philip said, give me an hour. He got on the phone, came back. Yeah, we're going to drive to another concession, half a day's drive. There's a guy up there that's got a concession, a friend of mine. He's got 2 big rogue buffalo that he would like to get rid of, so we'll get you on a buffalo hunt tomorrow. The difference between a lion hunt and a buffalo hunt is the law says you have to have 3 guns. The nickname for the Cape Buffalo in South Africa is Black Death. A rogue buffalo will go into a village, kill every moving body, and then just walk away just because he's mad. They are nasty. They hit the ground nasty. And they're huge. They're monstrously huge. I'm not going to belabor anything about this hunt except that Greg was shooting a .454, and it took 8 rounds to get the animal to its knees. Safari record book. The horns on a Cape Buffalo are called the boss. 42 inches would be record. Those are 44-inch bosses. The man has now, in 2 days, killed 2 record book animals. Oh, I forgot to tell you about the lion. When he took the lion to the taxidermist in Johannesburg to be mounted, this lady was the 4th generation taxidermist in Johannesburg, South Africa. And it was the 5th largest lion they had ever seen ever in the place. 9.5 feet, nose to tip of tail, a little bit over 500 pounds. I got to film this too. I'm on this hunt. I'm in Africa for one reason. I made myself available to this man years before. And there is sunset in South Africa. What an appropriate slide to end the story. However, this is when the story starts. This is when the story really starts. This is when the story, no pun intended, starts to have a little meat behind it. At the time that I went on this safari in 2007, I was living in Quincy, and I was a very active member of Columbus Road Baptist Church, pastored by one of my best friends on the planet, Bob Callum. We created an extremely aggressive evangelistic outdoor ministry. Our first wild game dinner, there was 35 guys there. 4 years later, that had grown into an entire Saturday, 9 to 5, with speakers, vendors, and we put 800 people on our campus in one day. And every one of those people heard the gospel of Jesus Christ. In 4 years, we added 8 families to Columbus Road whose first experience was at an outdoor ministry event. That's powerful. So when this whole deal got set up, I went to Bob's office and I said, hey, I said, I'm going to Africa, told him the whole story. I said, but I can't just go to Africa and hunt. What can I do? What can I do to make this mean more? At all of our outdoor ministry events, we make sure everybody loses one of these. Soft cover, camouflage, New Testament, Psalms, and Proverbs. Inside of it, we have a sticker that says from your friends at Columbus Road Outdoors with all of our contact information. Everybody gets one, especially the kids. Especially the deer hunters that have room in a backpack and spend hours in a tree stand. Especially the duck hunters that have room in their duffel bag and hours in a duck blind. Bob said, take a stack of them, and when you get packed, when you're all packed, just start sticking them in anywhere you can find a spot. Just stick them in your luggage. And when you get over there, just pass them out. You don't have to preach. Just pass them out. You gotta let God have a chance to do his thing too. So I said, I did. I took a dozen. The bush pilot that flew us from Johannesburg into the bush got the first one. I just handed it to him and I stepped off the plane and said, here's a gift for me to you. So thank you. Took 2 days for me to get to know Philip and Anka well enough and build a relationship enough that it was time for me to pull one out at their house. So it was dinner of the third evening. Uncle was cleaning up. I'm not a coffee drinker, but they always finish the meal with some kind of sludge they call coffee. So I stepped into my room and grabbed one of these out of my bag, and I came back in, and I said, "Philip," I said, "I have a gift for you." He said, "It means a lot to me. It means a whole lot to me. And you mean a lot to me, so I want you to have this." And I handed it to him. He took it. He said, "Well, thank you." He looked at it, thumbed through it, looked up at me, stood up, walked over to the trash can, boom. Turned right around, looked me in the eye, and said, "Not at my house, not now, not ever, are we clear?" This man's my host. I've just offended my host. I said, "Crystal clear. Understood." We got back to Johannesburg. I passed the cab driver, bus driver, everybody. I gave one to George. Didn't know if he could read it or not, but he was tickled to get it. The last night before we flew out, we stayed in Johannesburg at Philip's parents' house. And one left. His dad's name is Michael as well. Same deal. After dinner, everybody else went to do their thing, and I went and grabbed my last New Testament. "Michael, I have a gift for you. I appreciate your hospitality. I'd like to leave this with you. It means a lot to me." He said, "Well, thank you." And he looked at it just like Philip did. Looked up at me just like Philip did. He said, "Mike, I know this is important to you. I know what this is. And I appreciate that you think enough about me to give me this. So I have to return that sentiment and think enough about you to tell you what's going to happen to it." He said, "As much as I appreciate the gift, I'm going to put it over there on the kitchen counter. And it's going to live there until it's in my wife's way and she's tired of dusting around it, and then she's going to open a drawer and slide it into the drawer. Can't tell you how long it'll live there, probably until the next time, until the next time we clean out the drawer. And when we clean out the drawer, that will most likely end up in the rubbish." I said, "Philip, what you do with it is up to you. You accepting it from me is my part." That was the first week of October. I got this email from Michael. First week of March. "Dear Mike, whilst in the Republic of South Africa, you stayed with us a brief while. I am Philip's father, Mike. Upon leaving, you gave me a pocket Bible. Often when doing so, one might wonder if the gift was found to be of value, or was it just put away in some dark cupboard and forgotten? Did it mean anything? Did it accomplish anything? This letter, typed at blistering speed with one finger, will serve to inform you the value of the booklet you so kindly gave me. Without going into great detail, it helped save me. It is always with me when doing mission work amongst the very poor and sickly. God led me to go to a hospital and work there for Him. This is not a pleasant experience, but unbelievably rewarding. In the beginning, the staff made me feel very uncomfortable, but this has improved, and I am now able to bring God's words to the least of His children. Most of the patients I meet suffer from AIDS or related problems. By the time they get to the hospital, their condition is desperate. Many are unconscious and unable to communicate. Suffering is the order of the day, not to mention the poverty and lack of medical essentials. But despite it all, armed with my Bible, with a sticker that says, 'From your friends, Columbus Road Outdoor Ministry,' I, by the grace of Almighty God, bring them a message of eternal hope and salvation. Many of the people I have shared Jesus with are no longer with us. God willing, may you who donated this Bible one day have the joy of meeting them in heaven. I am told I am the only white man who tends to these souls' spiritual needs. God does bless you for your work, and he always will. Mike Prinsloo, Republic of South Africa. That note has absolutely nothing to do with me. I was led years before this to make myself available. Making myself available to Greg Pape got me to Africa. Making myself available to the people that I met there caused people in South Africa to be saved to this day. I'm in contact with Mike at least once a month. He has since gotten the contact information, and now he carries a briefcase of these New Testament Psalms and Proverbs with him everywhere he goes, and he is making himself available for God. Folks, if you don't want your toes stomped, raise them off the floor, because my question is, are you making yourself available? If you don't know Jesus Christ as your personal Savior, are you making yourself available to that message? If Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit do dwell within you, are you making yourself available for your friends, families, co-workers, neighbors who don't have that opportunity? Are you making yourself available, or are you finding reasons not to? Because that's the path of least resistance. The path of least resistance is, I don't need to do that. I got a preacher, his job. I don't need to do that. I got deacons, I got elders. That's what, Sunday school teachers, that's what they're for. You are wrong. When you lay down tonight, and it's your quiet time with the Lord, you ask him, am I making myself available for you? And let him answer that question. It's not up to me. None of this is about me. I am standing before you, a tool in his hand. His message to you through me is, make yourself available. Pastor, it's all yours.